Sundance Drive-In Double Feature presents 1 Minute with Blood Lake and Iced. All right, everyone, it's Dan. Welcome to the 73rd episode of 1 Minute with Blood Lake and Iced, covering minute by minute 1987's Blood Lake, slasher set by the lake during summer. 1988's, ooh, that's a little tough to say fast, Iced. Did we all have that trouble back in 1988? 1988's Iced. I guess we didn't. I guess it was just me. 1988's Iced, which is a slasher set in the winter, around Christmas time, in the snow, ski town, USA. But by this point, I would think most of you should probably know this is, gosh, Blood Lake has less than 10 minutes left, and Iced has less than 15. So there you go. Let us hop into minute 73 of Blood Lake. We left off with, Becky has been stabbed and she's on the floor. The Lake Patrol guy has shown up. The bad guy has been stabbed and his name is Jed or Jeff or Jay or Chad or something. And we learn I hope I'm not spoiling it. I hope you all listen to episode 72. You learn the reason why the killer is killing everybody. It's because Becky's dad bought this used to be his house. Becky's dad bought the house and never paid him for it. And Mike says, as you would, and for that he's going to kill everyone. And the Lake Patrol guy replies with, I guess.
Oh my God. Killed Tom too.
Becky. God damn, we're lost, but
who is that? Oh, the ambulance is here. Let's move out and get in some room.
Oh, God.
Susan.
Oh, God, are you okay?
Well, I really don't feel
well. Okay, go sit up in the fire alarm doors. Dad, I'm glad she's okay. Is she gonna be okay?
So we'll do everything we can for her.
Well, if you can't tell by the piano, this is the plaintive aftermath. About 20 seconds or so into the minute, you see an ambulance backing up, and it says Cheyenne Arapacho on the back of it. I don't know what that means. Maybe I'll look it up. Not right now because I'm talking. So this minute, yeah, they get out of the shed. And Tom the gardener body is hanging there. And the Lake Patrol guy sees that. They get out of the shed. And they see Susan. And she's... It's interesting. I've watched this so many times. And yet, this was the first time I realized what it was that Susan says. She says, "I'm more or less, I'm really not feeling that well." And that's why he sort of says, go and sit in the front of the ambulance. And it's always interesting because, well, I don't know how interesting it is. Let's call it semi-interesting. I always thought because the way it happens is you see the ambulance in the background and they're going in to get Becky's body. Or, well, she's not dead. They're going to get in to get Becky. And in the foreground, you get Mike on the left, Lake Patrol guy on the right, little Tony behind Mike, and Susan rushes up, and Mike gives her a hug and says, "How are you feeling?" And then I always just heard, "Oh, Susan, how are you feeling?" "Oh, well, go sit in the front of the ambulance." And she goes to sit in the front of the ambulance, but little Tony stays. And up until the third time I watch this minute, right now for this, which is probably the 20th time I've watched this minute, I thought she more or less said, you know, like Mike does, "Yeah, I'm all right." But she doesn't. She says, "I'm not feeling very well at all." So that's why he tells her to go sit in the front of the ambulance. Because it seems weird to me that, you know, like a guy at a scene with at a murder scene, a crime scene with an ambulance, would just randomly be able to go tell someone to sit in the front of an ambulance. But he says that because of that. So I'm sure he'll go and sit there, and then the medics will see her and take care of her. So it's actually the wise choice on Mike's part. But it always was slightly confusing to me. Why would you send someone who's all right up to the front of the ambulance? They're not all right, Dan. Pay attention. Listen. Of course, having said that, it was even tougher to tell what Mike says to the Lake Patrol guy after Susan goes, which is, I think, well, I'm glad she's all right, well, I'm glad she's okay, or something like that. Maybe that's what confused him. Maybe I heard what he said, and it didn't correlate with what she said. I don't know. You know, a no prize to anyone who could send me the transcribed dialogue of that scene right there. It's a short scene. It's only the 3-4 lines. But yeah, then they wheel Becky out, and she's in the gurney, or the thingy, and the thing, and yeah, the ambulance folks are going to take her. I like them because they move like they could be ambulance folks. Like they actually, I mean, we had that once in college. Or was it high school? It was college, where we were able to get sort of like a guy who I knew, a guy who was making the movie, and he knew, oh, was it? It was a cops. It was cops. He knew his dad knew a cop or someone, and he was able to get the cop to just like, you know, when he was in the neighborhood, just like there was a scene where it was like, just chase me up over the crest of this hill. So basically you just see a scene where he's like, he's running, and then the kind of camera's down on the ground, and the kind of the and then there's a road, and the road dips away, and then all of a sudden you see him running over the, you know, running up the road towards us, running towards the camera, and then all of a sudden a cop car with lights blaring comes after him. It was a lot of fun, and people are like, whoa, that's a real cop car. And the same thing with this. I it feels a bit like, whoa, that's a real ambulance, because they probably knew someone in the area who ran the ambulance service, and they were able to use the ambulance more or less like, okay, we'll pull in, we can be there for an hour as long as we don't get any calls, kind of thing. So, and hopefully there aren't that many mad killers running around in this area. So yeah, the movie is really sort of winding down. The plaintive music is plaintiving along, and yeah, I mean, it looks like, hopefully, I don't know what's going on with the killer, but I guess we'll find out shortly. I guess Becky first, and then the dead guy, who's been dead for a few days now, and then the other. It's funny, you would think the Lake Patrol guy is so surprised by the dead body hanging on the wall. You would think, I mean, that guy died, let's say, earlier in the day before they showed up, and they've been there. They got there one night, they've been there three days, this is the third night they've been there. So a stinky body hanging in the shed, oof. Oh, Blood Lake, bringing it to a close, yeah, like I said, we don't have much left in Blood Lake, 73 minutes, and the climax didn't really get as climactic as we kind of thought it would be, but sometimes that happens with the slashers. They're so busy doing one thing that it kind of, the balance is off. You know, you'll either get like a movie like Blood Lake, where there's no final girl, there's no real final guy, there's just Mike beating the crap out of the killer for like 40 seconds, and but there's so much a glorious ephemera before it, that when the actual climax comes, it's almost like, oh, we forgot to do a climax, and then the movie ends, or well, the movie's not over yet. But then you get a movie, say, like The Prowler, of which the second half seems to be the final girl in peril, or, you know, the ones where, like, the final girl segment goes on way too long. This is the counterpoint to that. So we'll see what Iced does. Where did we leave Iced? Oh, gosh, poor Corey. He was eating cherry pie, and he got stabbed in the shoulder. And last we saw him, he was dribbling cherry pie and blood out of his mouth, squeezing cherry pie in one hand, holding the knife kind of hilt in the other hand, and sliding down the fridge. Let's hear what happens next.
Corey?
Well, here we go. Here's part of the fun of comparing and contrasting. Blood Lake didn't have a final girl sequence, as a slasher most do. Iced clearly is about to have a final sequence, and Trina is going to be our gal. And we spend most of the minute with her in bed as she wakes up, She tries the lamp several times, and then she rummages through her purse for about 10 seconds and gets out a little flashlight. Now, it seems to be morning, because the minute begins with Corey finishes his slide. We cut to Trina asleep in her bed, and then we get Corey kind of slumping onto the ground, kind of shaking a bit with his eyes open and not looking very well at all. And then we get the lovely shots of the outside, and the sun's out and it's nice and bright. So why we spend 10-50 seconds, actually, if you count her clicking the lamp on and off, we spend more than half of this minute, I think, with her trying to turn on a light when it's clearly morning. So I don't know, maybe it gets really dark in there. I don't know, you would, I guess, I don't know, how do they light chalets or stuff as such? I mean, you would think, I don't know, because it's on like the hill there and the light shining down, and you would think it would light up pretty nice, but I guess they closed everything off, so it's kind of dark. But still, it's morning. I mean, you know, once, regardless of what time of morning it is, and regardless of how many windows I have shut and things in my house, you know, if the sun's up, I don't put on flashlights and things to get around the house. Just to get around the house. I mean, you might put on a light at some point during the day, but okay. Well, hey, you know, to each their own. Yeah, and it ends with her sort of moving out of the room and starting to look for Corey and seeing what's going on with her little flashlight there. And yeah, Corey is not well and in the kitchen, and the final girl sequence has begun, which doesn't leave me much to say about this minute. It's interesting to sort of, I know, to at the end of the day, to sort of compare and contrast the times is a silly thing, but maybe it's not quite, because these films became so formulaic, and that's one of the reasons why we love them, that if one of them suddenly went super long, like, say, Happy Birthday to Me, or shorter, like Last Slumber Party, you would sort of, you could note how things were being elongated, or things are being kind of cut out, or just smooshed down to a shorter thing. Because, you know, both Happy Birthday to Me and, well, Happy Birthday to, no, not really. Well, okay, Happy Birthday to Me maybe is not the right film to say final girl, final sequence. There is a final sequence, but there isn't quite the mad chase. Last Slumber Party has all that. It has all the sequence with Chris creeping around the house, discovering all the bodies and stuff like that, which I presume is what Trina is going to be involved in a moment. But meanwhile, yeah, over on Blood Lake, it's ending. So she's about to do the body discovering that we all expect. And I mean, I applaud Blood Lake for speeding it up in that respect. And I also applaud Blood Lake for giving us that sequence where they play quarters for forever and where they went water skiing for forever. I'm getting slightly nostalgic for Blood Lake, but we're not done with Blood Lake yet. We still have 9 more episodes with Blood Lake in it, I think. But still, I can be a little sad about it. But yeah, but Ice is still going strong. Ice still got a bunch of time left, and the final sort of battle sequence hasn't even begun. Yeah, Trini is now about to discover what's happening, and she may be discovering it just wearing, like, underpants and a long t-shirt. We'll find out more in the next minute. Listen to this.